I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest, Christopher Speed, is a tri-state area-based clinical nutritionist, dietitian, health expert, and director of Omega Wellness. Chris was the food and nutrition strategist for Old Ways Preservation and Exchange, where he helped increase awareness of the healthfulness of a number of traditional eating patterns, which range from Asian to Mediterranean diets. His particular interest is the dietary fat intake of these diets, especially the role of seafood and omega-3 fats, as well as omega-6s. He was the first global director of food and nutrition science at Oliva Public Relations Worldwide, where he provided counsel to many food brands, raw ingredients manufacturers, and prepared food quick service restaurants. Chris founded the North America chapter of the Minimi Nutrition USA, where he launched a unique supercritical Kotu extracted omega-3 supplement line into key retail accounts in North America and Europe, leading to its recent acquisition by Atrium Innovations. He is a much sought-after presenter on all health issues related to omega-3 supplementation, designer-made supplements that take into account up-to-date nutritional science and chronic disease needs, especially as it relates to help consumers balance their current excess intake of omega-6s. He is a Master of Human Nutrition and Dietetics from the University of Sydney, continues his academic work as an associate editor of the European Journal of Cancer Prevention, and is an adjunct lecturer at New York University Nutrition School. Chris also sits on the expert panel at Mission Ready. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Speed, and I look forward to hearing about Omega Wellness. Now first, why do we need omega-3s?
Omega-3s, in particular, long-chain omega-3s, which are predominantly found only in marine sources, they fill many crucial and vital roles in the body. In fact, they are essential, and in fact, if you don't get them from your food, your body will not produce enough of them to have their beneficial effects. And the general rule of thumb is omega-3s do two things. They bring down and reduce the inflammatory profile of every cell in the body, and they fulfill some very, very important structural benefits so that the cells in our bodies are carrying out their beneficial effects optimally and in a healthful manner.
And what are long-chain omega-3s and why are they so important?
The most commonly consumed long-chain omega-3s are EPA and DHA. EPA stands for eicosapentaenoic acid, and DHA stands for dicosahexaenoic acid. EPA, DHA is really the more convenient way to mention those big, long scientific words. They do two very unique things. EPA has the greater anti-inflammatory effect. And what that does is by reducing inflammation in every cell, tissue, and organ in the body, it will reduce aging and reduce the effects of time. So EPA is really, really, really important. DHA has somewhat of an anti-inflammatory effect. But what it more importantly does is it sits in the cell walls of the brain, central nervous system. So if you're a baby or a young child or you're a pregnant or breastfeeding mother, it's really, really important that you consume ample amounts of DHA so that the brain and cells of the central nervous system are getting that very, very important fat so that the brain and central nervous system can work really, really effectively. So EPA and DHA have this really, really important effect on supporting inflammation and reducing inflammation, and supporting the structural integrity. They're very, very different to the short chain, which are typically found in plant-based forms. And in fact, short-chain omega-3s will never deliver on the same omega-3 promises that have been shown in tens of thousands of research that are only being supplied by those long-chain EPA and DHA from marine source.
What do people do that are on a vegan diet?
It's very, very difficult for when people are on vegan diets, and by looking at people's blood levels of omega-3s in the long-chain fatty acid form, that you find that many of these people are very, very low. In fact, they are very much deficient in the long-chain form. When you start to remove marine and fish from your diet, your body will start to convert the short chain form better, but it still will not do it in anywhere ample amount. And that's why we really do encourage vegans and vegetarians to seek out long chain omega-3 forms from algae. In fact, there's more supplements now on the market than ever that actually provide this type of form. Mm-hmm. And there are some new products in the marketplace that are definitely more plant, vegan, vegetarian-based that are starting to provide the long-chain forms. Too many people are consuming the short-chain form, so they're consuming more flax oil, borage oil, these kind of things. And that's good. It's mm-hmm. definitely, quote-unquote, heart-healthy, mm-hmm. but it's definitely not going to give you that same benefit of actually consuming the preformed EPA and DHA from either the new supplements on the marketplace or obviously fish-based and marine-based, such as krill, options on the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Do people get what they need from just taking fish oil?
Yes, if fish oil is their choice, then that's definitely the case. What we're actually seeing in the space of the supplement space is a real change in sentiment towards fish oil, however. It's suggested that up to 40% of people, that's 40%, so a mm-hmm. very significant part of that population, are walking away from the fish oil category, mm-hmm. and they're wanting to seek out their long-chain omega-3s from other sources. And the reality is there's very few choices for them. One of the choices that people are being drawn to is krill oil.
Mm-hmm.
Krill oil will provide them with the long-chain omega-3 source, such as fish. And because people are looking for the new omega-3 in the marketplace, this is one of the reasons why krill oil sales are up. And actually, while krill oil is being giving people a lot of really, really beneficial benefits.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And are there other options for the omega-3s?
Yes, there are other options for omega-3s. You will see many sources of different fish. So some people may not like the fact that the vast majority of supplements are being made from anchovies from Peru. So mm-hmm. other sustainable forms, such as pollock, are one that people are getting a lot of interest around. When you leave the fish oil category, you can see that there's green lip mussels from New Zealand. That's another source. You see that there's calamari or squid forms mm-hmm. of the mm-hmm. long-chain omega-3s. So there definitely are different sources that are really coming to the marketplace. But because, quite simply, people are not wanting to always get their omega-3s from the fish oil source itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Earlier, we talked about atrial fibrillation and also the balance of omega-6 and omega-3. Could you tell us a little more about that and what you recommend for people who have atrial fibrillation as far as their fish oils?
Sure, Carl. Yeah, the first thing I'd like to talk about is this issue of omega-3 and omega-6 imbalance. It's something that almost every American, every westernized consumer in the world suffers from, and they don't even know it. So the way in which I like to look at it is it's not just a matter of consuming more omega-3s. Omega-3s are important, as we've said, and most of us aren't getting those long-chain omega-3s. The bigger issue is probably the fact that we're not only getting too few omega-3s, but we're consuming too much omega-6. Most westernized diets have an incredible amount of omega-6 in them. In fact, in the last 100 years, we've gone from consuming about 2% of our dietary energy intake to at least 8%. In fact, no other nutrient has gone through such an increase in consumption in that similar time frame. And what you find is that omega-6s do the opposite of omega-3s. So whereas omega-3s are anti-inflammatory, omega-6s are pro-inflammatory.
Mm-hmm.
And what they also do is they beat up on the omega-3s. So it's harder for your body to incorporate the omega-3s into the cells of every organ and tissue in the body. And therefore, it prevents omega-3s from exerting their vital and essential effects. So by having your omega-3 and omega-6 levels placed into balance, what you're essentially doing is you're increasing your body's ability to benefit from being less inflamed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a whole bunch of heart health outcomes that could occur from a result of disease, as a result of pro-inflammation, and one of them may well be this issue of atrial fibrillation,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of many. And although individuals are looking for only pharmaceutical intervention to assist with that, which should always be considered, especially in consultation with your primary care practitioner and healthcare expert, what we are also encouraging up their omega-3 intake.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the amount of omega-3 that most Americans need to consume is at least 1,000 milligrams a day. And what I would encourage people to do is, in consultation with their primary care physician, is look at increasing omega-3s to at least 1,000 milligrams. And I've actually seen many physicians put people on 3,000, 4,000 milligrams a day to really, really, really seek out the full benefits of those long-chain fatty acids. And I would also encourage people with any of those heart health issues to really seek high levels of omega-3 intake, and so that you can try and promote a better balance with this excessive omega-3 that most of us are suffering from.
I mentioned earlier that Dr. Sinatra, who is one of the big names as far as alternative treatments for heart problems, recommends 3 to 4 gram a day of the fish oil, I think is what he says, right? And also, I wondered, what are some sources of omega-6? You said it's so common in our diet.
Yeah, well, most of it's coming from soybean oil. There's been a 1,000-fold increase in the consumption of soybean oil in our diet. So you think about where soybean oil is. It's typically in fried, processed foods. So in other words, we're talking about the issue that we've been speaking. Less fast foods, less processed foods, and more foods that are plant-based is probably going to be a good way to move forward. But also think about the salad dressings you use. Think about where there's a lot of fat in them, condiments, things like that, where you're typically very easily going to add a lot of omega-6s. So look at where the fats are coming from in a product. So if you have the option between a product that has soybean oil in it or olive oil, then obviously go with the olive oil. You're going to have lower levels of omega-6 in that product. And simply consume less of these really fatty products that are giving you so much of the omega-6. The two lowest omega-3 fats in the marketplace, macadamia nut oil and coconut oil, and they're also really great fats that you can put into your diet to really reduce your omega-6 intake. So by just being someone who reads labels and understanding where a lot of these fats are coming from, you can really reduce your omega-6. From a meat standpoint, chicken provides a lot of omega-6. So, you know, also think about maybe consuming less chicken and consuming other types of meat, especially if they're reared and brought up on grass. You'll typically find that they'll have higher levels of omega-3 and lower levels of omega-6 in the final product.
Where does sesame oil stand?
Sesame oil will be relatively high in omega-6, and so that's why it's important, you know, to consume that in moderation. Most people don't consume too much sesame oil, and what I'm definitely not saying is cutting these things out of your diet. Sesame oil provides vitamin C and a whole bunch of other very important nutrients, but eating these foods in balance. And when you look at traditional diets, especially the Mediterranean diet, which is really the poster child of wellness and health, in those countries, they didn't remove the consumption of these foods. But what they would do is, with that product, with that side meal that might have had slightly higher levels of six, they ate fish. You know, so they're balancing their omega-3 and omega-6 so that they're benefiting and enjoying the virtues of foods that might be higher in omega-6, such as whole grains and nuts and seeds, but they're also balancing it with foods that have higher levels of omega-3. So it's all about balance, not removing things 100% from your diet, because it, in the long run, that's simply not going to work.
It's interesting, because I was using olive oil, and my naturopathic physician friend suggested that I switch to sesame oil, because he said that it was very soothing to the heart. So I've been using sesame oil, you know, I guess for a couple months now. So
yeah, well, as we were talking before we were recording, you know, one of the ways to know whether that advice was sound or not is to actually have your blood levels of omega-3 and omega-6 checked. And because you don't really feel whether you have high levels of omega-6 in your blood, right? It's, I mean, some people say they might, because that might be associated with their ability to have to be attentive, to sleep well. But the vast majority of us don't really feel this. So by actually having your blood levels analyzed, that could be a really, really good way to know whether that advice was sound. And more importantly, if you want to change your diet, whether that your dietary intake is actually having an effect. Because at the end of the day, it's about seeking out long-chain fatty acid forms of omega-3s that are providing you with the benefits, getting into the cells. And that's why krill oil, for instance, is really one of the very exciting new forms and sources of omega-3s. And the other thing too that is really affecting the omega 3 category isn't just about where it's coming from, but whether it's being sustainably brought to the marketplace as well,
mm-hmm.
so that your children and your children's children can also benefit from the long chain omega 3 sources.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, what tests should people get that would give them the information they need? Will the cholesterol test, the triglyceride test, and some of those tests do it, or is there a special test that they need to get?
Yeah, there's a special test when people are getting their cholesterol levels checked, triglycerides, blood pressure, analyzed, all these things. They're getting them measured, and that's important. So you could see whether, for instance, if you lost weight or you change your supplement protocol, whether it's going to have an effect in improving that. The same thing with omega-3 and omega-6 imbalance. In fact, a test that can provide this is called the My Omega Blood Test. In fact, myomegabloodtest.com is the website that anyone can go to actually see the test, see what it's all about, and actually have their omega-3 and omega-6 levels analyzed. What it will provide you is a very easy-to-understand report of, indeed, that, how much omega-3 and omega-6 is in your body.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what your baseline is. And then once you've improved and consumed more whole food forms of omega-3 and supplemental forms, if that's what you would like to do, and you've sought out how to reduce 6 as much as you possibly can,
mm-hmm.
you will inevitably find that your results will improve.
Mm-hmm.
So people can now, for the first time, have it analyzed through that blood test and, again, really see what benefit those long-chain fatty acid supplement forms are actually providing.
That's great. Now, you mentioned sustainability. And why should we be concerned about the sustainability of sourcing?
Quite simply, the vast majority, and I'm saying 80-plus percent of fish oils that are produced, that are actually used to produce supplements, are unsustainable. They're all from Peruvian anchovies, and even the Peruvian government have critiqued negatively sustainability practices of their fishing systems. In other words, are they overfishing? Is there a quota set of what is acceptable in terms of volume and the amount of fish being taken out of the water? And it's not really being done very, very well. Big question mark overhangs that particular market. So for 80-plus percent of fish oils, they're unsustainable. We cannot guarantee our kids and our children's children that they will also be able to benefit from those long-chain
mm-hmm.
fatty
mm-hmm.
acids.
Mm-hmm.
So the gold standard in sustainability is a fishery system or a krill capturing system that is Marine Stewardship Council certified. There are a number of eco-label programs on the marketplace that attempt to do this, but none of them do it to the level of detail and assurance than the Marine Stewardship Council certification program. So what I would do is I would implore people to not just seek out long-chain fatty acids supplements, but seek out the ones that are MSC approved. And you'll see it's got a beautiful little blue logo, and there aren't many products in the marketplace, but there are enough for people to seek them out. There are very affordable forms of them. In fact, the Superba krill is the only krill oil on the marketplace that is actually MSC certified. And you'll also see a growing number of fish oil brands that are going to start to have the MSC logo. It's really, really, really important, and it's an ironclad guarantee of two things in addition to many other things. But the two key things is that there's been a very rigorous quota that's allowed of how much krill or fish can be taken out of the waters.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's MSC certified, such as Superba krill, that's your guarantee that they're going way below that quota. In other words, they're not over harvesting krill or fish.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing
mm-hmm.
is the level of bycatch is extraordinarily low. In fact, to be MSC certified, you need to be less than 1% bycatch. So for every 100 pounds of krill or fish, how much are you also taking out of non-target species? Dolphin, shark, sea urchins, non-target species that we're not intending to take out of the waters. And so to be MSC certified, you also have to be extraordinarily low in terms of bycatch. You have to be less than 1%, whereas, again, the Peruvian anchovies are at least 5, 6, 7-plus percent bycatch. So MSC certification is a really, really, really important and serious element when it comes to what fish oils, what krill oils you should be choosing. And again, we would really encourage people to seek out the Marine Stewardship Council certified Superba krill brands or the other fish oil brands that are MSC certified.
Mm-hmm. Is there any danger of mercury toxicity in any of the oils that we consume?
All fish oils. There is not one fish oil on the marketplace that has not had to be processed to remove environmental contaminants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the important thing. Every oil has to go through a process.
Oh.
And that's not a bad thing. That's a really good thing. Interestingly enough, krill oil is never purified, especially krill that actually comes from Antarctica. So when you look at the two main sources of long-chain fatty acids on the marketplace, fish oil will need to be processed to remove environmental contaminants such as mercury and PCBs and dioxins and all the nasty stuff that's unfortunately in fish oil. Krill oil actually is never purified, which is really quite interesting because it's from waters, especially Antarctica, that simply don't have environmental contaminants in it, and that's the reason why. They're also very, very small, so that they're at the end of the food chain where there's the least chance that they're going to have contaminants in their oil. So whether it be fish or krill, the good brands on the marketplace will either be processed or they'll be the superber brands that will then come to market in a really, really, really pure way. Increased consumers, more than ever, are really worried about this. And what they should be doing is they should be asking the brands that they're taking, prove it to me that you're contaminant-free, that you're a pure source of these long-chain fatty acids. And again, the good brands will be able to provide them with that third-party assurance of purity around whether it be a krill or fish oil source.
Great, good. Then, Dr. Speed, do you have anything else you'd like to say before we look at your services, products, and how the listeners can locate these?
Sure. I think the general rule of thumb is really, it's not really rocket science. And what we want people to do is have a good omega-3 experience. What I would encourage people to do is look for and start to read labels on their products. Seek out the omega-3s of the long chain type, and the ones you'll see are EPA and DHA. Purchase those omega-3s because they're the ones that bring a tide of tens of thousands of research that show that these are the ones that deliver those very important anti-inflammatory and structural benefits. Because we know that there is more people than ever walking away from the fish oil category, we know they're walking towards the krill oil category. And that's a good thing because that provides the long-chain fatty acid forms of called EPA-DHA. There also appears to be some benefit to krill in that it's a phospholipid form of omega-3, and there could be some potential improved and better bioavailability. Because remember, as we spoke about, it's not until those long-chain fatty acids sit in the cell walls of every cell, tissue, and organ in the body that they're going to exert their benefits. So for the well-read consumer and customer, there could be some benefits in actually seeking out the phospholipid krill source of long-chain fatty acids. And while you're increasing your omega-3 intake, think about reducing your omega-6 intake. And really the last point is there's very, very few products in the marketplace that are truly sustainable to the level of being Marine Stewardship Council certified. They do exist. And it's just a matter of you looking for brands, looking for on the labels, and trying to identify where that MSC logo exists, and choosing that because that is a source that you, your children, and your children's children will be able to benefit from for generations to come.
Great, good. Then, Dr. Speed, would you tell us about your services, the products, and how the listeners can locate these and get in touch with you if they want?
Sure. Well, yeah, I would definitely love to talk to your listeners around the importance of identifying brands that are Marine Stewardship Council certified. So there are a number of brands on the marketplace that provide you with krill, those important source, very sustainable source of long-chain fatty acids. You'll know it's sustainable if it says MSC on the side. And simply, it's just a matter of you looking for products. The Superba ingredient is used in many very well-known brands. And for that reason, regardless of the brand, just seek out whether it's MSC approved. Ring up the company and ask them, is your krill oil Marine Stewardship Council certified? And if you don't want krill and you prefer fish oils, do the same. In fact, there's more brands now than ever that actually will have that MSC logo on it. So as opposed to me really sort of telling you about a brand, it's really more of an ingredient and really getting yourself to look for two things. Am I about to purchase a product that has EPA DHA in it? And because they are the ones that are important. And the second thing is it sustainable? Does it have that blue logo on it, the MSC logo? Or have I had it confirmed by the company that indeed it is extraordinarily sustainable to the degree of being MSC approved?
Do you have a website?
Yes, superbakrill.com. is the website for listeners who would like to sort of understand more about the krill source of omega-3 and really what goes into making a really best-in-class, sustainable and highly effective long-chain fatty acids form. That website will provide you with all the information you need. It'll also give you some important information around what the MSC logo looks like and the importance of that, so that if you don't want to purchase krill ultimately, at least you know what to look for in other sources such as fish oil if you want to consume a sustainable source.
Well, this has been great. It's been helpful to me personally, and I know it will be helpful to the listeners. And I appreciate so much your spending the time with me and giving me this valuable information. So I thank you, thank you.
I appreciate your time very, very much.
My second guest, Ellen L. Botkin, earned his Doctorate of Psychology degree from Baylor University in 1983 and then worked for the next 20 years at a Chicago-area VA hospital specializing in the diagnoses and treatment of post-traumatic stress disorders. He has treated combat veterans from World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, and Desert Storm. Dr. Botkin and his colleagues were among the first in the country to regularly use a new and very powerful psychological procedure called eye movement desensitization and reprogramming, EMDR. In 1995, Dr. Botkin discovered by accident that a variation of EMDR reliably induced after-death communications, ADCS, in his patients. ADCS are experiences that nearly all people believe are authentic communications with deceased people. While Dr. Botkin has remained neutral with regard to the spiritual authenticity of his patients' ADCS, he has maintained that the healing associated with these experiences go well beyond what has ever been considered possible in the field of grief and trauma therapy. Dr. Botkin calls his new procedure Induced After-Death Communications, or IADC. After leaving the VA in 2003 and founding the Center for Grief and Trauma Loss in Libertyville, Illinois, Dr. Botkin and his IADC-trained colleagues all over the world have induced many thousands of ADCSs. His book is Induced After-Death Communications, A Miraculous Therapy for Grief and Loss. Dr. Botkin has also published scientific papers on post-traumatic stress disease, EMDR, IADC, and brain function. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Botkin, and I look forward to hearing about IADC. Now first, what is IADC?
Well, IADC is a psychotherapeutic method that's now being taught around the world based on a discovery I made in 1995. And in 1995, I was experimenting with a variation of EMDR, or eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, a very powerful psychophysiological therapeutic technique. And when I began experimenting with different variations of this eye movement procedure, I stumbled completely by accident on finding out that one particular variation that I began to use ended up with my patients reporting having communicated with the deceased person they were grieving. And at first I didn't know what this was all about. As a matter of fact, my concern was that my patient had just hallucinated and that he had psychologically decompensated. And he left my office basically full of joy. He had gone through a horrific trauma with me, and I was concerned that, again, that he may have decompensated. So I was working on an inpatient PTSD unit at the time, and I alerted the PM staff to keep an eye on him, because I was worried about him, and found out the next day that he had actually slept 8 hours that night and was in a great mood. and things seem to be much better with him. And I thought that maybe that was a one-time psychotherapeutic event that I would never see again. It seemed, struck me as very unusual. But nevertheless, I was happy with the results that held up. And then it was a month or two later that another patient reported a similar kind of experience. And this, the second patient was equally thrilled and full of joy about what he had just been through. And he, both these first two patients were absolutely convinced that the spirit of the deceased person they were grieving had come through and communicated with them, basically told them everything's okay, everything's fine, I'm okay, I want you to be okay, you can give up your pain, and I wish you would, and so on. And then after a couple more patients had this experience, and I realized that they were not decompensating, but in fact getting psychologically much better and healing very rapidly, that I began to, well, what I did was I went back and looked at the cases where this experience occurred and those that where the experience didn't, and I wondered if I had done anything differently that would cause this experience to happen, and I saw it was clear as a bell. And it just required an extra set of this eye movement. And when people were feeling like they were in a good place and they had pretty much processed and desensitized their pain and their intrusive images associated with the loss and so on, and this extra set of eye movement seemed to open them up to this very natural experience. So I added that extra element with the next patients I saw, and then they all began reporting this experience. And I didn't know what they were. Of course, as a psychologist, I studied psychology for 10 years in college. Nobody ever told me about this.
Well, they probably didn't know about it.
So I remember it was soon after that I read the Guggenheim's book, Hello from Heaven, and they did a very thorough study on spontaneous after-death communications, or ADCs as they called them. Which was the first time I heard there's actually a name for these things. And I was absolutely astonished when reading that book that what people on the survey were reporting were nearly identical to what my patients were reporting. So this very natural, this, you know, the Guggenheims and then others later, you know, studied how frequently these experiences occur in the general population, and the I think the current figure is somewhere around 30% of people who have lost a loved one have an after-death communication in which they believe they have actually talked to, communicated with, contacted, and so on and so forth, the deceased person, you know, they were in grief over. So I was a here I am a psychologist on a PTSD unit experimenting with variations of a this EMDR, which came out in the early 90s, which is an extremely powerful psychotherapeutic procedure. And it involves having the patient move his or her eyes, usually following the hand of the therapist moving his or her hand back and forth in a left to right rhythmic fashion, while at the same time attending to an aspect of the traumatic event. And what was found, and this has been researched and now mainstreamed, EMDR has been, and what happens is whatever the patient is attending to at the time rapidly processes and changes. And we're finding out now that prior to EMDR, certain parts of the brain responsible for the reliving component of the traumatic memory, fire and isolation, that's why when people have traumatic memories, they just don't remember what happened. They also relive the moment. A trauma may have happened 40 years in the past, but when someone thinks about it, they feel like they're living it, reliving it all over again. Well, the EMDR and this eye movement procedure, we found right away, could take the reliving component completely out of the traumatic memory. And my patients would say things like, you know, doc, this is the first time when I think about the what happened, it feels like a long time ago, and then it's finally over. And that very much fits neuroimaging studies, which show that prior to eye movement, the deep cortical structures fire that are responsible for the sensory and emotional components of the trauma, which is why people feel like they relive it over and over. But after the eye movement procedure, the frontal lobes fire, the executive functions of the brain, which perfectly fits our clinical experience. And the idea there is once the frontal lobes are now remembering the trauma and not the deep cortical structures, the trauma can now be remembered in an emotionally detached and abstract way. Like, hey, it feels like, you know, I can remember it, but, you know, it feels like it's over.
Right. Now, is this hypnosis or something similar?
Well, one would, that's a question I get very often. Actually, even though in terms of face validity or on the surface of it, they sound like they may be very similar, but actually they are the opposite. When people are in a hypnotic state, their brain waves slow down and they go into deeper waves and they become highly suggestible and so on. In EMDR or variations of this eye movement treatment, the brain waves are the same as waking consciousness. In fact, we have reason to believe that it actually speeds up the processing of the brain, which makes it very much the opposite of hypnosis. You know, when we're asleep and dreaming at night, our brains are actually processing and integrating information more rapidly and efficiently than when we're awake. And it's been known for some time that this increased processing during dreaming causes our eyes to dart back and forth, which is why dream sleep is called rapid eye movement or REM sleep. The discovery of EMDR, which was made by Francine Shapiro, Dr. Francine Shapiro, in the late 80s, seemed to suggest that you could take a fully awake person and you can get her to move her eyes in a similar fashion. It actually puts the brain into that higher processing mode, and we can use it when people are wide awake. And it literally makes therapy go about 100 times faster. People rapidly process, rapidly get through issues, rapidly put, you know, traumatic experiences behind them and so on. So as wonderful as this EMDR was, there were some parts of their standard procedure that didn't make sense to me. So I was in a situation where I had the opportunity to experiment with variations on that. And I did do a few things that I think make the EMDR procedure work much better. And then, plus, my patients began reporting these ADC experiences at the end, which then made it very different. So after this had happened a number of times, and knowing that the Guggenheims had called these spontaneous experiences ADCs or after-death communications, at some point I began calling my psychotherapeutic procedure induced after-death communication, or IATC.
And are these spiritually authentic?
Well, you know what? I am a psychologist, and I've specialized in grief and trauma for about 30 years, and that's all I do. And the experiences, the horrible experiences I deal with in people are beyond what other people can even imagine, just horrible, awful kinds of things. My main concern and what I'm interested in is the healing that's associated with these experiences. I have chosen not to engage in the debate of whether these experiences or near-death experiences or so and so on, you know, prove there's an afterlife. And I kind of stay away from all those kinds of arguments. And when people ask me, hey, doctor, what do you think? Are these experiences spiritually authentic? And my response is generally, well, why don't you go ask the people who have had the experience? In fact, they're the only ones who truly have an informed opinion. I'm just a psychologist, and I'm trying to heal people as best I can. And plus, it doesn't matter what people believe. This procedure works equally well with atheists, agnostics, and true believers. Belief systems seem to have nothing to do with it. It's all about a very powerful neuroscience-based psychotherapy that just seems to open these people up to this very natural healing experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good enough for me.
Right. Now, is there research to support IADC?
Yes. If one goes to my website, induced-adc.com, I have a list of all published research on IADC.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have to say at the same time that while we are getting research out and published, and it's all very positive and supportive, our clinical formal research is lagging behind our clinical experiences, and there are now IADC therapists all over the world, and we're all communicating and we're all getting the same results, but for this to be mainstreamed, I completely
mm-hmm.
understand that we need to do formal scientific studies.
Mm-hmm.
So people can see those published research articles on my website. The University of Virginia is also mm-hmm. currently conducting very sophisticated EEG analysis of people mm-hmm. going through IADC therapy and having these ADC experiences. So we're in the process of finding out what's going on inside the brain. There are also a number of people who are putting together formal control group design studies, which,
mm-hmm.
of course, are the standard in the field. But those are getting underway, and the rest of us, all the IADC clinicians, are very confident that the results will be positive and supportive of what we've been seeing for years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You worked for a long time with the post-traumatic stress disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a bit about the treatment for that, and do you use this at all with them?
Well, I early retired from the VA in 2003,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and I had worked there 22 years, but I had to leave there to write my book and to bring
mm-hmm.
this to IADC, to the general public, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, before Dr. Shapiro's EMDR procedure came out, which changed everything for us,
mm-hmm.
we were using a procedure that was pretty much the standard scientific approach in the field, which came under the umbrella of cognitive behavioral therapy,
mm-hmm.
but more specifically, the technique that we used was something called exposure. And the idea with exposure is that you repeatedly expose the patient, i.e. have them talk about, think about, and so on, the traumatic event in a safe and supportive and so on environment.
Mm-hmm.
And the theory behind that makes sense, which is that with repeated exposure, the negative emotional charge eventually diminishes over time. Well, we were using exposure techniques for many years, and while we did get some very slight or modest results, they also didn't seem to hold up over time.
Mm-hmm.
And when we treated these poor combat veterans with exposure techniques, they were absolutely miserable after a session because all we ended up doing was bringing up the traumatic event, and then they started to relive it all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And they frequently were up all night, and if they did manage to fall asleep, they immediately had a nightmare of the traumatic event they worked on and so on. So it was a long and very grueling process, and the outcomes were fairly discouraging.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then when we started using EMDR on our inpatient unit, in the early 1990s, I think we started using it in 1990 or 1991. We were one of the first in the country to begin using it with real PTSD. Then our results absolutely changed. After
mm-hmm.
an EMDR session, people, instead of being up all night, would go take a nap and feel
mm-hmm.
good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it totally changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when EMDR came out, we never went back to exposure therapy.
Oh.
Now, I have to say that, you know, I even watched a 60 Minutes segment on post-traumatic stress disorder, and it was so discouraging, and I was so dismayed, as many of my colleagues, to see that the EMDR wasn't even mentioned. They basically talked about variations of exposure therapy.
Oh.
So that was very sad. I mean, there are methods out there that now really make a difference, and we on the other side of it are doing our very best to get this out there to the general public and to the scientific community to let people know we have something better. And that's why I appreciate you inviting me on your program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Good. Then, Dr. L, can you tell us about your book and services and how listeners can locate your book and reach you?
Okay. My book is, the title is Induced After Death Communication, A Miraculous Therapy for Grief and Loss. And it's available on Amazon. My website is induced-adc.com. You can click on the book and go to Amazon from there. But on my primary website, there's a lot of information, and there are also a list of therapists all over the world. And if anyone is interested in getting this kind of therapy, by the way, the therapy is pretty quick and to the point. And it only takes two 90-minute sessions to really resolve a trauma, regardless of its severity.
Mm-hmm.
But people all over the world are available, and trained therapists are listed on my website. There is also another website, healingafterthewar.org.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people who do that website are conducting and have done filming for a documentary. It's unclear at this point whether it will be a documentary film or an internet series on IADC, but we are also looking for funding to get that project completed.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody out there has some funding ideas, please go to healingafterthewar.org.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I always like to see a more holistic approach in all fields, and it seems like that the combination, even though we can't talk much about spirituality, it seems like that the combination of psychology with spirituality is a move in the right direction to become a little more holistic, I think.
Yeah.
So,
these ADC experiences have been happening. They happen across culture. They've been cross-culturally. Mm-hmm. They've been happening over time since the beginning of time, and they've been known to be very healing experiences.
Right.
And the fact that we can now include that in a psychotherapeutic setting and actually induce the experience at will, then we can, pull that therapeutic and healing aspect into the psychotherapeutic situation.
Right.
About 75 to 79% of people who undergo IADC therapy have one of these ADC experiences.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I thank you very much. I've enjoyed it, and I know the listeners will find this interesting and helpful, so I thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Carl. I really appreciate your help in getting this out there to people.
Great. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. I invite you to my websites, www.holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all of the past shows from the last 5.5 years under the blog with a search engine so you can look for a specific topic. You will also find a place to sign up for a free monthly newsletter on holistic health and the latest information on research on cancer, also under the blog. I also invite you to my website, beatlungcancer.net, where you will find information on my latest book, You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions. You will also find endorsements. You'll find additional information about the book, and you will also find a site where you can purchase the book from me, or you can also purchase it at Amazon.com. I also invite you to join me on Facebook under Carl Helvey, or under Holistic Health Show, or under Beat Lung Cancer. I also invite you to join me on LinkedIn under Carl Helvey, or on Twitter under Holist Health Show. I hope you've enjoyed the show today, and I look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a great week.